This is The After Party, live with Kim McAllister. Pick a couch, grab a drink, and settle into the conversation.
Aloha Friday. Hello, everybody. I got my PG&E blanket, and I'm ready to go on this Friday afternoon. So I will say the live portion of this show is going to be a little shorter today, but I have a recorded portion that I'm really excited about. So here's what happened. You're probably aware of the changes with the Nicki Maduro show. And we have, because of that, some guests that we wouldn't be able to accommodate anymore. And I was thinking about that, and I thought, well, you're still going to get a healthy dose of John Rothman on the Mark Thompson show, right? And you're still going to get a healthy dose of Jefferson Graham on the Mark Thompson show. But Tim Sica, I want to bring him to the After Party live. And so I have done that. Now, it could be that he migrates back to the Nicki Maduro show if she decides she wants him back. It's okay if our Friday shows are going to go a little bit longer. But for now, I wanted to make sure he had a platform and that we all got his movie reviews, which I've grown to really love. So he couldn't go live today. So last night, Tim and I taped a movie segment. It's about a half an hour long. And so I'll run that at the end of the show. So I just want to make sure that you're aware of that. So between now and then, there's a lot to talk about, and we only have about 9 minutes to do it. So we'll see if I can get some things in here. I do want to take a moment to just thank, first of all, I'll show you this picture. I was talking about it yesterday. This, I think it might be AI, because I have never seen hibiscus flowers like this with this color scheme before, but I wanted to show you that picture because they're so pretty. Even if they're fake, they're pretty. I hope they're real though. But I wanted to take a moment to thank all the people that have stepped up within the last couple of weeks since this show transitioned, especially to a new PayPal account, who have come forward to help me support the show and help keep it going. So I know if you're listening via podcast that you won't be able to hear the, you know, see the names on the screen, but I just want to thank everyone who has contributed. All the names that you're seeing right now in the last couple of weeks, people have really come forward, and I just thank you so much for helping me keep this show going. Really, honestly, it's so kind. Janet R, a new addition to this screen, so I changed it last night to add her as well. A Janet W and a Janet R. I have two Janets, which is cool. I love Janets. I also have two Kims and I have two Kathleen's. So that's cool too. Wait, is it Kathleen's? Hold on. Two Kims, two Cynthia's, my bad. Two Cynthia's, two Kathleen's too, but one's spelled Kathy with a C and one's Kathleen with a K. So awesome. Huge, huge After Party. Aloha to you. Huge hang loose shock assigned to you. So appreciate you. So yesterday we talked about doing this. I'm very excited about the meme of the week. Won't take long. No one sent me any memes. I'm so bummed. Kim at theafterparty.live or kgoinexile@gmail.com. You can find me both places. Also kimmcallister@gmail.com as well. Two M's, two C's, two L's. But here's the ones that, you know, you always save a couple that maybe hit you in a certain way. Humans doing the hard jobs on minimum wage while the robots write poetry and paint isn't the future I wanted. That one really struck me because it's true. When you think about AI coming in, you think maybe, you know, AI doing the menial jobs, right? The jobs nobody wants to do, but has to toil away and do. Not AI writing your paper for you or doing the intellectual work, but that seems to be where we're going. And one more, even though we're not political here, maybe it's better to regulate railroads and banks instead of uteruses and drag shows. Yeah, that one had me saving it as well. So again, meme of the week. If you find one, we'll do them every Friday. Send it to me if you find something that makes you laugh or that you find powerful or what have you. Update on Brave Little Hunter. It turns out Brave Little Hunter is a female 2-year-old calf. And we've been talking about Brave Little Hunter, who's stranded in a lagoon off Vancouver Island in Canada. And we have a little more information about Brave Little Hunter. Her mother, of course, was pregnant, got stranded in this lagoon, and died. And so now you have Brave, they've named her Brave Little Hunter, and she's been stuck in this lagoon for a couple of weeks. the thought was that perhaps the food sources there may be dwindling and time is really of the essence. But it looks like a recent health check of her indicates that she is healthy. Now, she does have whitening of her skin. And that, they say, is because of the condition of the lagoon. So her appearance is changing a little bit because of the fresh water in this lagoon is whitening the skin on the dorsal side. But veterinary experts say they're really not concerned about the short-term impact of that. They say that she is active and that she does not show signs of being emaciated. So they're encouraged that she's still healthy, but they know they've got to get her out of there. And so the rescue efforts were supposed to be this week, but now they're being pushed back to maybe Sunday or next week. That's the latest that we have. They know that because of they've checked and they've seen the drone footage of her. Here's another shot from the drone that she is female. And again, looking pretty healthy. So that's good. And they're really pulling out all the stops to hoist her out of the water and get her into what they hope will be a situation where it's a penned-in area where they use to farm salmon in this pen. That's what they use it for. But putting her in there until her pod goes by. They say if they can't get her back with her pod, that she won't survive. So that's key. Anyway, I'm still monitoring this. This is a situation going on off Vancouver Island, and we'll keep following up next week as that's when the rescue effort is expected to get underway. That's the latest on Brave Little Hunter. I really hope everything goes well with her. Another animal story I have for you is this bear who apparently, I don't want to call this bear a bad bear, but this bear has been snapped up by animal officials before for being in populated areas, getting a little too comfortable in populated areas. So it's not a bad bear necessarily, but it's just a bear that tends to go on the hunt for food and gets a little too close to people. This bear was seen again this week at Palisades, Tahoe. And they decided to close down a couple of ski lifts because this bear kept being spotted in the area. So for the safety of skiers and snowboarders that may be a little too close to this wild animal, they shut down a couple of ski lifts. The bear has a tag on its ear and a GPS collar, which generally means it was caught and re-released into the wild for being a, quote, bad bear. No, not a bad bear. Come on. It isn't necessarily aggressive or bad, they say. It's not a problem bear, but it was trapped in a more developed urban area of Lake Tahoe, later released somewhere in a remote spot in El Dorado County, and now is back toward people again, maybe coming back to close to where it was born. They're not sure why that happens. Maybe between a year and 2 years old, this bear. And it's continued to hang around the mountain. So they had to close the Granite Chief lift again yesterday. It was also seen on its hind legs leaning against the trail closure sign. It's they're trying to create negative human-bear interaction. What they call it is hazing the bear. So they're sending biologists to do this so that it gets the message that it can't be where people are. That could mean paintball guns, making noise, chasing it. You hate to see an animal cause stress, but really better than the alternative, because if it keeps coming back near where people are, there's a chance that it might not survive that interaction, right? So give it an unfriendly experience and it goes back somewhere where people are not. So yeah, as the snow melts, the black bears in the Sierra are waking from their winter slumber. So they think sightings like this are going to increase. They're waking up, they're getting more active, they're out, they're looking for food. So time to look out for bears if you're in the Sierra. Did you hear about this chimney cat? This is a cute little kitty. Apparently had a bit of a problem, this chimney cat. It fled from its owner's vacuum cleaner. You know, sometimes animals get freaked out by the sound of vacuum cleaners. And it spent 2 days trapped in the chimney of the these people's homes. And that was my son coming in. Hello. And so fire crews were called out after 2 days. This cat named Oreo wasn't coming back down. And the owner started getting really worried. And so they called the firefighters. And they come out. They take about 3 hours to get him out and then reunite Oreo with the owner. Owners are thankful to the firefighters. They say, firefighters love animals too. We are ready and willing and able to assist distressed or injured animals. The last thing we want is for people to put themselves at risk rescuing an animal themselves. We do encourage people, they say, to call the RSPCA the first instance and will assist if our special equipment is required, as it was in this case. So again, this happened in London, and Oreo is safe and he's back with his people. Thank you to Janet R. for the sponsorship this week of animals. Much, much appreciated. Okay, I now have the privilege, the honest privilege, of being able to bring Tim Sika to the After Party Live. And this is sponsored by Robin. So the movies with Tim Sika, sponsored by Robin this week. Huge thank you to everyone again who has taken time to sponsor the show. And I do hope you enjoy this special presentation of Tim Sika live, or not live, recorded at the After Party Live. It is time for the After Party Live at the Movies with Tim Sika. And I'm so excited to welcome Tim in his debut with the After Party Live. One of the things about changing things up with the Nicki Maduro show is I was thinking that our guests like John Rothman and Jefferson Graham still have a home and a voice with Mark Thompson. But Tim Sika was going to be left out in the cold, and I just could not have that happen, especially since you all know how much I love his movie reviews. And I've said it over and over again, the thoughtful way with which he approaches movies, I just feel like he needs to have a voice. So for now, I am welcoming Tim Sika to the After Party Live. And of course, I know Nicki has first dibs on you, Tim, but if she wants you back, I'll reluctantly acquiesce. But give for now, for now, I'm scooping you right up and bringing you along. So here you are on the After Party Live, and welcome.
Well, thank you, and thank you for scooping me up when my future with you guys was a little up in the air because of all the changes. So thank you for having me on the show. Yeah,
absolutely.
It's great.
Yeah,
it's great.
I'm happy to do it. And you know what is interesting is today I saw a lot of people in the chat saying, oh, no, what am I going to do without my Tim Sika? So there are there were people that were concerned about it. And I had forgotten to mention that I had already scooped you up and that today you would be on the show and it would be everything was going to be all right. So here you are.
Well, I hope in some small way benefits your audience and maybe, you know, brings a little more people into the fold. Fingers crossed on that.
It's not a Friday without my Tim Sika, so we got to do it. Well, let's jump right into it because I've seen this this movie advertised a lot.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, if you saw it advertised.
It's an historical drama. What's going on with the Civil War?
Yeah, it's called Civil War, and I just saw it today, and I'm still kind of reeling from it. It's Alex Garland is the writer-director, and it's this movie is very intense, very unsettling. It's a drama, a dystopian drama, that takes place during the U.S.'s Second American Civil War. It's fictional, but it postulates things based on, let's just say, some of the things this country's going through right now, how divided we are and all that kind of stuff. And its plot follows this team of four journalists, photojournalists. Kirsten Dunst heads the team, who travel across the United States to Washington, D.C., where they hope to interview the president during the time of this horrible time of turmoil before this civil war escalates any further, and maybe even his presidency deposed, because the whole country is engulfed in this war. And it's intense, mostly due to the horrors that these journalists encounter along the way. Some of the things they see, some of the things they photograph, some of the things that they unwittingly get entangled in. And I guess the operative word or adjective to describe Civil War is disturbing. I don't know if you got any of that from the trailer, But it's an impeccably crafted. Alex Garland's movies are always well made. The quality is very high. And this one is more of the same. It's an impeccably crafted, alternately serene and turbocharged drama, which, of course, as I said, has special resonance because of the times in which we're living and how divided we are as a people in this country. One of the many virtues of the film, Kim, that I liked is that Garland, the director, deliberately leaves sides and specific politics vague, right? So you kind of never know who is shooting whom or why or what side these people are on politically, which is all to the good, I think, because you don't, even if you want to judge or your biases want to kick in, they can't because you're not sure what it is you're watching. Sure. And I also suppose that this is the filmmaker's acknowledgement of the important work of journalists and journalism in general, especially those journalists who venture deep into a war-torn country. I saw the film in IMAX, and that's probably the best way to see it, if for nothing else, for the picture's elaborate and searing sound design. I mean, when the guns go off in this movie, you basically have to plug your ears. It's so loud.
It's the next, you know, step in painting a target on a journalist's back, which we know has happened in recent past, right?
It's
all fake news. Don't trust the journalists. In some cases, politicians have painted targets, right?
It's gotten
really ugly. And it's a point where we're at the point where if someone like Trump wins a presidency, there is a legitimate fear that he could go after people that have spoken against him. And he's already talked about retribution. And then you have a movie like this coming in. And in my mind, it's not too far-fetched.
Yeah. Well, it's not too far-fetched. And that's the way it played. It's very, very powerful. It's very disturbing. It's very well acted. It's unnerving all the way through and deeply unsettling. I think this movie is the director's January 6th kind of writ large in cinematic terms. Not a pretty picture, but an important and powerful one, to be sure. I think it's really, really good. I've got colleagues who didn't like it, which I'm going to investigate why, because maybe they just didn't like what it was that they saw. Maybe they felt it was dangerous. I don't know. But it does stir things up when you watch this movie. Yeah.
Okay. So that's a recommendation from Tim Sika on Civil War.
Let's go
to this one. This is called The Greatest Hits or Greatest Hits.
The Greatest Hits. Yes, that's the movie. This is a well-intentioned rom-com. That's what The Greatest Hits is. And not a half-bad one at that. You know, tomorrow I'm going to be interviewing the cast, so I don't want to appear too disingenuous here in discussing the movie because it's a bit of a mixed bag. It was written and it was directed by this guy named Ned Benson and Lucy Boynton, recently seen in the musical biopic Chevalier. She plays this young woman in this story who every time she hears a song that she's happened to share with her deceased boyfriend, who tragically died in a car crash. And every time she hears a song that reminds her of him, she automatically and reflexively travels back in time to that moment in time when the song was playing. In other words, the moment she shared with her boyfriend is like recreated.
So Groundhog's Day?
Let me say first, in a way she's suffering, right, from some form of PTSD and unresolved trauma, because she's constantly being triggered when she hears these songs that remind her of this man she was in love with. So she pretty much is a homebody, right? And when she goes out, she wears noise-silencing headphones that block out any possible hearings of songs that she doesn't want to hear and that could trigger her to have a kind of public epileptic-like seizure. Anyway, this all gets stirred up, right, and messed up a bit when she meets this guy, played by Justin H. Min, who was in that movie Shortcomings, which we talked about on Nikki's show, who she's attracted to. So, yeah, this movie premiered at Sundance, right? Fox Searchlight picked it up and is actually distributing it, although it will premiere on Hulu, I think, instead of playing in theaters. So they obviously saw dollar signs. I think what this movie wanted to do was to show how music and memory interact via a kind of a love story. I don't think that, or the time traveling conceit always worked, especially our main character, Harriet, literally traveling back in time every time she was triggered by one of these songs that reminded her of her boyfriend. At first, I thought it was all in her mind until they literally literized it on screen. I can't remember the exact moment I realized, oh, she's really time traveling.
Oh,
This is not just something she's having like a manic attack over. She's time traveling. And I went, I don't know about that. But anyway, that caveat aside, I enjoyed the film because of the two leads, mostly Lucy Boynton and Justin H. Mintz. They're very, very appealing screen personalities. I don't know if this film would have worked as well with a lesser cast, but I guess we'll never know. I'm thinking diehard rom-com fans may just disregard my misgivings and just enjoy the movie for what it is. I wish you could see it too, Kim, and then tell me what you thought about it, because
I will.
You're the rom-com expert. But like
this
I said,
has the script, me written all over it. Yep.
It does. And I think if I had to guess, I'd say, yeah, you might think some of it's a little eye-rolling, but the emotion of it, I think, in the end works. And
yeah.
You know, like I said, the script at times, the time travel conceit was a bit hard to swallow, but I did love the actors. So, I'm recommending The Greatest Hits, even though there's not a lot of songs that I recognized in this. And I'm wondering if it's because they chintzed out and maybe couldn't get the rights for like some more better known pop hits. But it was a swing and maybe a bunt, not a miss, but not a one bagger either.
Is it a movie theater movie or no? It says Hulu. It's coming
Hulu,
out on Hulu.
Yeah, it's coming out on Hulu. Yeah, Fox Searchlight picked it up from Sundance. Yeah, and it's not going to play in theaters. It's going to go directly to Hulu. So
okay, cool.
Yeah,
let's talk about the Beast movie.
The Beast, yeah, another romantic movie. There's lots of romantic movies.
Is it?
We're going to be talking about.
It sounds like The Exorcist or something. I don't know.
Yeah, doesn't it? Yeah, this one is a romantic drama, a rom-drom. I don't know if that's a thing. Not a rom-com. I guess you call it a rom-drom.
Oh my gosh, you just coined a new phrase. It's a rom-drom.
I think I did a rom-drom. Anyway, and also in its own way, another time-traveling one, because it skips from period Paris 1910 to modern day 2014 to a future run by AI in 2044. And it's called The Beast. I think Carl Jung could have written the script for this one, but it was actually written and directed by a French filmmaker, Bertrand Bonello. Mm-hmm. And I suppose it's best described as a science fiction romantic drama. It's based on a Henry James novella called The Beast in the Jungle, which I happened to read in college. And the main theme of that novella has been pretty much carried over to this movie, The Beast, which is that the main character in the novella, it was a guy, but in the movie, it's the woman who has this belief, this nagging belief that her life is somehow going to be defined by something horrible that's going to happen to her, something catastrophic or spectacular event.
How'd you like to carry that around?
Yeah, laying in wait for her, right? That has something to do with either her death or the death of somebody close to her. So that's pretty intense. And that's the main theme of The Beast. But clearly the screenplay veers off into very different plot lines. The woman in this story, her name is Gabrielle, and she's played here by Léa Seydoux, really wonderful French actress. The movie takes place, as I mentioned, in three timelines, 1910, 2014, and 2044, where this story actually begins. It begins in the future, and the story goes back and forth in time, but it's 2044, AI is in full swing, and our protagonist, that lady in the picture there, decides to purge herself of all emotions. You know, we're living in 2044, and I guess emotions are kind of frowned upon. So she
like
agrees.
Spock?
Yeah. So she agrees. Yeah, I know, right? So she agrees to have her DNA purified to rid herself of all of her strong feelings. But then she meets this guy, played by George Mackay, who she feels she's known before, strangely, maybe in past lives, and with whom she shares this very, very powerful connection. So she gets confused. So that's the premise. And this is, I would say, so far, one of the best movies I've seen this year.
Wow.
There's lots kicking around in this story, lots of mystical and scientific hintings at in terms of like what's going on in the mind of this woman. The cast is great. Seydoux and Mackay are great. It's a long film. It's well over 2.5 hours, but it's a fascinating one. And one of those movies, Kim, this reminded me of the kind that they used to make in America and internationally, like in the late 60s and 70s, when movies held a much more prominent cultural sway than they do today. It was one of those movies people would go to the theater to see, and then afterwards go out for coffee and talk for hours about the meaning of what it was they just saw. Mm-hmm. That's what this kind of movie reminded me of. And this is a bit of fun trivia. The movie ends with a QR code that encodes a link to a video that has the end credits that you can watch on your computer or laptop or mobile device, which is in keeping with the futuristic aspects of the story. And there's an Easter egg there too in the credits. So it's fun to check that out when you think the end credits are going to come on, you get this QR code instead. But yeah, this is one of the very best movies of the year so far. Very compelling. Very, very compelling.
That's so interesting because I think my personal thought is that it's disrespectful to get up before the credits are done rolling. I always stay seated.
Yeah.
I always give respect to the people that are, and I always watch the credits.
Yeah. So do I. Yeah. That's a very cineasty thing to do. I'm
probably the only thing I do that's that way. But I've always been taught it's like leaving a play before the curtain call, right? It's all these people that have put their time and their effort and their lives into making this movie, because this artistic effort, it's blood, sweat, and tears, you know? So I always want to give credit where credit is due. But a lot of people get up and they walk out of the theater. If they give you a QR code and you, for some reason, you have to use the facilities or you've got to get on the move, it's nice to know that you can actually watch those credits and still do that. Even if you've left the theater. That's cool. Right. I like it.
Yeah. And there's also a little like Easter egg in there too. That's part of the plot. That's an interesting thing to get in addition. Yeah. They also may have done, obviously they did it for thematic reasons and keeping with the like futuristic AI theme of the film. But I also think that maybe they also did it because I think the end credits go for like 6 or 7 minutes and the movie was already 2.5 hours. Maybe they wanted to be mindful of the audience. But yeah, don't you hate it in live theater when the curtain goes up and people are taking their bows and people are like, you know, it's trying to get out and get past people to run out of the. I hate that.
It's like the plane just landed.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't like that. No.
Yeah, I don't either. So anyway, so that's The Beast. It's a really good movie. I recommend it.
Okay. Let's go to this one. This is La Chimera.
Yeah, I guess La Chimera. I think it's Italian. Okay. I'm not even sure exactly what it means. It had different meanings.
A chimera was like some type of form of change, like a creature that changes shape or something.
That's one of the meanings. And then there's another meaning too about something that you're sort of like going after because you think it's going to bring you happiness kind of thing. But that you're right. That's they actually have some pictures illustrating what you just said. But this is an Italian movie with English subtitles, but there's also some English spoken scattered about. And it's weird because Neon, the distributor for this movie, is marketing this as a period romantic drama. IMDb says it's an adventure comedy fantasy. All of which probably, this is going to be a weird review, but all of this probably has something to do with the fact that not only did I not get this movie, but I'm completely in the dark as to why it's been so critically acclaimed. So then I went, looked at all that, and so I went to the review, something I never do before I file my own. And I was really incapable of seeing what the critics who were raving about this movie were seeing. It's the story of a guy played by Josh O'Connor, who's in The Crown. He plays Edward, Prince of Wales in The Crown. But he plays this guy. He's just out of prison, I think. He's a former archaeological scholar. And once out of prison, he resumes this practice, this illegal practice he has of ransacking government-protected Etruscan burial sites, where a lot of priceless Etruscan antiquities are buried. Then he and his group of locals then sell at a fraction of their price these antiquities to the black market, right? Mm-hmm. And that's this movie. in competition for the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival, National Board of Review cited it as one of the top five international films of 2023. A Metacritic score of 90 it got, which is super high. It got 13 David Donatello Award nominations, and it got an 8 out of 10 Rotten Tomatoes score. So if any of that entices you to see this movie, which it would me,
right?
And so it should it, you might want to check it out. But I just didn't get it. I watched it twice, and still, based on the buzz, was kind of underwhelmed, to say the least. I didn't know what this movie was going for. I read some of the reviews, and the reviews were really well written, but they were just kind of like this purple prose, and I'm thinking, I didn't see any of that in this movie. Yeah. Maybe there was something in there about when we place like a monetary value on something, which, you know, when we do that, we may like arguably diminish its intrinsic worth somehow, because we're putting like a monetary value on it. But for a 2.25 hour sit through, I kind of already knew that. So this is my weird take on La Chimera, which opens in Bay Area theaters today if anybody wants to see it.
Interesting. Sometimes if I've been told that a movie is so amazing, I kind of set my expectations high. And then I go in and because I'm thinking it's going to be at, you know, this high level, it doesn't quite measure up to what I thought I was going in. Maybe that's what happened. I don't know.
That could have been. But usually when that happens to me and I have to, somebody once told me about the way to really enjoy a movie or a theater piece is to learn how to manage your expectations around, around the movie or the theater piece. And I think that's really true. But I saw this thing and I went, okay, whatever. Then I went and I read what people were saying about it. And I said, okay. And then I went to watch, I actually watched it again with that, what those people wrote about in mind. And I still didn't get it. So I'm just going to put it on the back burner for a while. Maybe in 5 years, I'll see what they were seeing.
But, are you giving it a thumbs down?
Boy, I guess I have to. Yeah. I'm going to give it some thumbs down. Ooh, I'm going to lose a lot of credibility.
You know what?
But you know what?
It is what it is. You got to be true to your heart.
It is what it is. Yeah, yeah. That's my opinion. That's why I mentioned all the awards and stuff it was getting. that may get people to go see it. I want to be fair, you know, to these movies.
Let's talk about this one, The People's Joker. I was reading about this, it says it's a trans superhero movie.
This is a wild and totally out there movie. There's a song, Kim, I don't know if you know it or if your kids ever saw the movie, from the 1967 musical Dr. Dolittle with Rex Harrison. It's a song sung by Blossom, the circus owner, played by Richard Attenborough, when he sees a push me pull you for the first time, called I've Never Seen Anything Like It in My Life. That's the name of the song. That's The People's Joker. Best described as an anti-comedy comedy and a DC superhero parody movie with a transgender narrative, written, directed, and starring Vera Drew, a transgender woman who's worked in TV for the last 15 years or so, professional television person. And truly, you know, it's damn near impossible to synopsize this movie, but I'm going to try. Drew plays this law-breaking comedian in a dystopian world monitored by Batman, who's grappling with her gender identity. That's basically what this movie is about. So if that sounds like something that tickles your fancy, this is a movie for you. I want to say that this is a movie for Batman fans too, because it is. Vera Drew is a self-professed huge Batman fan herself, because there are so many Batman references in this movie. There's tons of SNL references too. There's meta comic book goings on. It's really quite something. It's stylistically uncompromising. It's original and so very, very, what's that French word? Outré. Yeah, it's outré. It's this insane fantasia of color and live action and animation, kind of messy too, but also deeply rooted in its own vision. I found it most effective as a kind of trans allegory. Mm-hmm. It's a movie people will either love or hate.
Okay.
Now after having said that, I'm going to contradict myself and say that I was sort of down the middle on it, because it frankly exhausted me. it took a lot out of me to just kind of follow it and watch it. It overwhelmed me, actually, but I'm not sure in a way that would make me necessarily want to see it again to see what I might have missed, because right. It was really it was all over the place. And it was like, you know, one second I was dazzled, and the next second I'm going, what the hell am I watching? And then I'm watching it for 5 more minutes going, what the hell am I watching? Then I was dazzled. Then like 10 minutes goes by and I'm going, what the hell am I watching? So on the other hand, these kind of personal movies are the kinds of movies that need to be made, and I think that need to be seen. And it's good that The People's Joker is out there because, well, it's its own animal. I've never seen anything quite like it in all my years of watching and reviewing movies. That says something. And Dollars to Donuts, I bet nobody who's tuning in to the after party has seen a movie like this either.
When you say you've never seen anything like this, or it's the, you know, the first of its kind kind of thing, it makes me curious, and it makes me wonder. I mean, it could be that you've never seen anything like this and you never want to again, or it could be that, you know, it's so innovative and interesting that it makes sense to just check it out. Where can we find it?
Well, it is innovative and it is interesting. It's playing in theaters exclusively beginning today, which is when this will be seen, Friday. Right. Yeah, Friday, April 12th. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's in Bay Area theaters. Yeah. But this is the week for weird movies. We're going to talk about Sasquatch Sunset next, right? I think that's what's next on. There it is.
Sasquatch Sunset.
This is another weird movie. Also premiered at Sundance this year. It's directed by the Zellner brothers, David and Nathan, who make weird movies for a living. Let's just put it that way. But this one is about a family of four. Yeah, there they are in the poster. Bigfoots, mm-hmm. who we follow for an entire year as they live out their existence, I think somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. They're nameless, but the family consists of a mom and a dad and their son and an elder Sasquatch. I'm assuming it's the father of either the mom or the dad, the grandfather, okay? Four of them. And the movie begins with these beautiful shots, kind of like what we see in the poster there, of landscapes and vistas and mountains and bodies of water, breathtakingly beautiful cinematography. And then after that, it's 88 minutes of no dialogue, just grunts and squawks and monkey sounds, reminiscent of the Dawn of Man sequence in the 2001, you know, the first opening sequence of 2001 with the apes just grunting and making sounds.
How long does that go on?
It goes on for 88 minutes. There's no dialogue in the movie.
You tell the story with the grunting?
You can, yeah, you can.
Okay.
What's interesting about the film, I guess, is that it begins as this weird, weird, surreal comedy where we observe this family of four Bigfoot creatures living day to day in what looks like an unspoiled environment. They eat, they defecate. I mean, we see all this. Oh. Vomit, have sex, masturbate. A lot of it is pretty disgusting, but it's kind of funny. I guess
they're out there living their best lives.
Yeah, they really are. But then it gradually, slowly turns serious, a bit tragic. And those critics who are really liking this movie a lot are saying that it's poignant, actually poignant. And this is another movie I'm two minds about, like The People's Joker. It's a weird movie. There are a couple of affecting moments. But the humor is a kind of it's one joke premise stuff. And it's gimmicky on the whole. For one, it's gimmicky to put known actors, in this case, The Social Network's Jesse Eisenberg and The Good Doctor's Riley Keough, in monkey suits, totally unrecognizable and clearly used here to bring some extra cachet to the project. But so given how totally buried in Sasquatch hair and costume these roles require, anybody could have played these roles. Yeah. So it's like, why are you putting movie actors that we know in them when we don't even know until the end credits that they're even in? It's dumb. It was just really dumb. Anyway, summing up, it's a weird movie. If you like weird movies, it's a movie you definitely have to be in the mood for, but it's thoughtful runtime. It felt longer than 88 minutes, but thank God it was only 88 minutes. But it's thoughtful runtime, its willingness to try something new and different, and the fact that it's an environmental indictment of how humanity's destroying nature, you know, and I've been in that camp solidly since the 70s. I have to recommend it just because it's so different and it's so weird. Oh, and there's a great score here too, composed by this group called the Octopus Project. Yeah, the Octopus Project. So it's all sound design, no dialogue, lots of music, and the Sasquatch communicate in squawks, grunts, and monkey sounds.
So I guess if it wins the Oscar for best sound design, right?
Yes, it could be nominated, or maybe even makeup. I mean, because the Sasquatch look very realistic. Yeah. And it makes a comment too about the environment. It's pretty on the nose, because what the Sasquatch start to notice is like evidence of humans. But we never see any humans in this movie. We just see what they've left over at their campsite, or we see a trap here and there. And there are some moments that are affecting in a dramatic kind of way. But it's definitely, if it's anything, it's a kind of a surreal comedy. But it's so weird. Again, it's another one of those. I don't think I've ever seen a movie like this before, although it doesn't really outdo the People's Joker in that regard, but it's still up there. It's still up there. But, you know, if it sounds interesting, you know, check it out.
Last one we've got today is Arcadian.
Yeah, this last film here on our list was a total surprise to me in that,
Nicolas Cage, is that?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's being advertised as a Nicolas Cage thriller, and Cage is in it, and he's good. But it's more of a horror film than a thriller, and it's really more a story of two brothers. So in the movie, Cage plays the father of two teenage boys who are living in this post-apocalyptic world. Boy, so many movies have this as a theme, you know, running topic, these post-apocalyptic environments. Anyway, the three of them, Cage and his two sons, played by Jaden Martell and Lost in Space's Maxwell Jenkins, they're living in this post-apocalyptic world that's safe. It's safe by day, but by night it's hellish, because these really ferocious monster creatures come out and look for ways to get in people's homes and into their spaces, right?
No, thank you.
Yeah, and this is I thought this was going to be lame, really. I thought, what is going to be new about this? You know, it's just, but it's a very tight, very skillful, and emotional, too, little indie horror drama about family and sibling love that offers hope, but the hope that it offers is realistic. It's not pie in the sky, and it's not like, oh, let's just put a happy ending on this. It's a realistically hopeful drama. And also, you'd think there was precious little any filmmaker could do with this kind of premise. It's like a 45-year-old premise, by my reckoning anyway, more or less began with Ridley Scott's Alien in 1979, where, you know, these aliens attack, and, you know, there's these on-screen representations of alien-like monsters. But the direction by Ben Brewer is really good. The performances are all top-notch. The monsters are actually new, and they're nasty little buggers, too, in ways we've never seen before. Oh. And there are gaps in the story that make you wonder, you know, we're told, though, that these creatures were brought about, people believed anyway, were brought about by the pollution humanity caused to the planet. But we never really learn about Cage's wife or the mother of the boys or how they were born. Was it before or after the apocalypse? And all this omission of backstory and exposition just lends more power to the story, because it keeps you wondering and guessing throughout the whole movie. So it's a terrific horror movie, quality made and scary as hell.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Sounds like a full-on Nicky Maduro movie is what it sounds like.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's Nicky's movie for the week, and yours is the greatest hits. That's the one for Kim McAllister.
So we'll back it up. You say Civil War is a yes. You really enjoyed this movie. Yeah. You give it a thumbs up. The Greatest Hits, you said it's a rom-drom, a sci-fi rom-drom.
Well, no, that this is the rom-com. The rom-drom is the beast.
Oh, but you enjoyed it, you said.
I like this one. Yeah. It's the time travel one. The time travel I wasn't so sure about. But yeah, it was fun. The cast was great.
This is the rom-drom.
Yeah.
And you said that was one of the best movies you've seen this year so far.
Yeah, pretty much. Yep.
So you couldn't get behind this one, no matter how good the other reviews are. La Chimera. Yeah. It's a thumbs down. It's a rare Tim Sika thumbs down is what it is.
To a highly acclaimed movie. Yeah. Mm.
You've never seen anything like The People's Joker before, and that could be a good thing or a bad thing. Yeah. And you think maybe it's a good thing. You're middle of the road on this one, you say.
Yeah, middle of the road, but I still recommend it because there's no category you can put this movie in, really. So it's worth seeing for that reason alone, I think.
88 minutes of squawking, but it tells a story, and it's weird, but you're going to recommend it.
Yeah, I've got to recommend it, yeah.
Sasquatch Sunset. And then Arcadian horror movie, say it was skillful.
Yeah.
And you really liked it. You said it's great.
Scary as hell, too, which is always good for a horror movie, right?
Awesome. Tim Sika, thank you for coming by and making your first stop at the After Party Live and bringing us all these great movies. I really appreciate you being here.
Oh, well, thanks, Kim. It was fun. It's always fun to talk to you, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And with that, we round out the show. Everybody have a great rest of your Friday. Make it a great weekend. I will see you for a bite-sized Nicki Maduro show on Monday is when that will begin, followed by the Mark Thompson show. And then we're back here on the After Party Live Monday afternoon at 1. Until then, bye-bye.
The After Party Live would like to thank the following contributors and viewers like you.